CliffCentral.com. All right, we are live on a Wednesday morning. It's Ryan Mash and I. We're keeping you company. And today we've got a pretty special interview with a guy called Chris Wyatt on the way. Just by the way, I got to say, after seeing that video in the break that we just took, it doesn't seem like you guys need a team building. It seems like because of our new offices, everything's a team building. Don't you think?
Yeah, no, it's been like that.
Every day is just a challenge.
We met the dude who runs a little restaurant down the road, and he said he'll come and make us pizzas in that pizza oven someday. So we must do that.
Oh, sweet.
Hell yeah.
Lovely.
There's a team building where you don't have to do stupid activities that I might want to be a part of. Just like stand around, eat pizzas, and have a good time, you know? That could be fun.
Sign me up.
All right. All right, so here he is. This is Chris Wyatt, and I think you're going to enjoy his conversation with me. We talked about U.S. politics, South Africa, what's going on, what's next, and he has some pretty interesting insights into what he thinks South Africa is looking like at the moment. He was visiting here just a couple of days ago, comes out regularly, and has been working for the intelligence operations here in South Africa. Now he's retired from that and from the army, but he's got some experience in some interesting places, so we thought we'd catch up with him. Here he is, Chris Wyatt, a retired colonel in the U.S. military, and expert on many things.
Colonel, it's good to see you.
Gareth, it's a pleasure. Thanks for inviting me. It's exciting to be here. We've done this before, but remotely. Yeah. When I was in the States, you're here back in South Africa. So last time I was here for that month visit, for you guys, spring, fall for us, August, September, it was rush time. You were busy. I was busy. We didn't get a chance to link up. This time it's worked out.
Well, let me remind everybody, you're a retired U.S. Army colonel, extensive security and international development and education experience all over the world, but especially here in Africa. And you're a big fan of South Africa. You come here often. You love rugby.
Yes, I do. Although I might not be safe. This weekend, I have press credentials. I'm covering the Stormers Bulls game at Loftus.
Oh, nice.
Of course, as a journalist, I'll have to be neutral and not wear my Stormers jersey till after the game. But I have secured a few bodyguards after the game when I put on my Stormers jersey at the Marriott.
You'll need them.
People are welcome to join me there. I'll be fighting off the jiu-jitsu.
You'll need the bodyguards. So last time I remember you and I had a really good chat about kind of U.S. politics, local politics, South Africa, what you think's going wrong here. And I mean, you come here often enough to know more than most South Africans. I'm scared to say, but it's true. So how do you think, with the benefit of like a couple of years now of being a regular visitor, what do you think's going on here, and how do you feel things are either declining or improving? Because I speak to local friends and the news isn't always good.
Well, more than a couple of years, it's about 30 years I've been coming to South Africa. And of course, because of the hiatus, we'll call it, for a few years there, I'll call it the hiatus, I was unable to travel internationally after I retired from the Army in 2019. So my first visit was back, 2018 I was here, and then it wasn't again until 2021 when I came, 2022. So I came last August, September. It's the first time. I saw a demonstrable difference in how things were here, just economically, how bad things were. So many businesses, so many lodges, bed and breakfasts, hotels that I stayed at, restaurants are gone.
Yeah.
Vaporized, completely destroyed by the lockdown.
Well, let's just talk about that for starters, because I still haven't bitched enough about this.
Let's.
And I,
it's your
I know
platform. I'm happy to join you.
we had this conversation before, and you and I both said the mistakes that these governments have made, your government in the U.S., our government here, pretty much all of them except Sweden, are actually
Taiwan.
Are inexcusable. I mean, the fact that they've done such absolute lasting damage to the population, to healthcare, to the economy, to everything else, and that they've gotten away with it is absolutely outrageous. And I don't think there are enough people who are as angry as we are. I mean, I really think that there needs to be some people need to be hauled in front of tribunals, put on trial, and put into jail for the damage they've done. If you did this in any other place and time, the government would be held to ransom. They'd have their feet put to the fire. Why do you think that they've gotten away with this all over the world?
Well, before I answer that, let me say I agree with you 100%. 100%. In fact, these are crimes against humanity.
Yeah.
And they're sadly.
Do you remember people couldn't, I mean, just from a purely emotive point of view, people couldn't visit their dying relatives in hospital.
My mother couldn't go to hospital for her cancer treatments and is dead as a consequence.
There we go.
There's so a death actual, that they need to answer for.
There we go.
She had stage 4 metastatic lung cancer, which was a 4-month life expectancy. But they gave her one of those newer drugs from Abbott. I think it was Keytruda or Truvada, one of those. But you have to have intravenous injections twice a month at the facility. So she went to the hospital for 18 months. Her cancer froze and started to diminish. She was living a good life. She was taken off that medication because she was no longer allowed, because only COVID patients could go to the hospital.
Right.
And within 90 days, she had cancer throughout her body and was dead within 5 months.
I'm so sorry.
No, thank you. It's the death I attribute to this. And yeah, so why did they get away with it? Because I don't know. I guess while the rest of us are looking the other way, our governments were taken over by a cabal of leftists around the world. I mean, thank goodness Mr. Ed is gone in New Zealand, just in Ardhurn. She's finally gone. But Dan Morrison, Scott Andrews in Australia, what we see here in South Africa with the ANC ruling in this country, in the United States.
Mr. Ed, you're talking about Jacinda Ardern.
Yes, yeah, Mr. Ed, you know.
You know, yeah, I mean, I said something horrible about her on Instagram the other day, and I got people calling me a misogynist and all kinds of things.
Oh,
and I said, you know what? That would count for something if this woman hadn't been so terrible at her job.
Yes.
And I would accept that criticism if I wasn't also criticizing male leaders all over the world. Trudeau and company, who've done as bad a job. How the hell have these leftists, because you hit the nail on the head there, I think we can skip right over the rest of it. How have they become so absolutely unquestionably powerful? And why is it that people still see them as the people who are compassionate and caring and want to help people?
They're
when
not.
They're
the very people that are exactly what they accuse everyone else of being.
And they've proven it with their reaction to COVID. They've done more damage than good. They are not the compassionate people.
No. No, and they've gotten away with it because, at least in America, they've done exactly what Ronald Reagan warned everyone about. They've used our own institutions against us. You win Democratic elections, and there are consequences to them. And as a result, we see what's happened in the past, well, under Obama, and now we see it under Biden, what's happening, just totally irrational governmental decisions. Our national debt, $32 trillion. And just a decade ago, 12 years ago, it was $11 trillion. And a decade before that, it was $3 trillion. This is insane. And that's not even the full size of it. When you include state, county, municipal, corporate, personal, mortgage debt, unfunded pension liabilities, America owes over $200 trillion, mostly to Americans. Our foreign debt isn't the issue. It's mostly Americans who hold two-thirds of our debt. But that's an insane. Our GDP is only $27 trillion a year. It's insane. When will we pay this debt off? And they're burying us. You have to wonder if there isn't some big conspiracy to destroy our currency with quantitative easing, printing more money. In fact, if it hadn't been for the abuse of the dollar, the euro would have collapsed a few years ago with the Greece and the Italy and the Spain and the Ireland crisis.
Austerity.
Yeah.
Which didn't seem to be austere enough. How is it that your government has come to such a place where I saw Joe Biden the other day claiming credit for reducing the insulin price? He did in the State of the Union address, which was done under Donald Trump. If anything, he put it on pause. Remember,
Biden is a serial plagiarist. He's a serial liar. I mean, it's documented. I don't know how anybody falls.
Didn't
for
he
it.
Say he came here to South Africa and he basically?
I met Nelson Mandela at Robben Island in Soweto. Yeah. Oh, okay. Yeah. Okay. Folks, Soweto is an acronym. It stands for Southwest Townships, located not too far from here in Johannesburg. Right. It's not an island off the coast of Cape Town. It's about 1,200 miles.
So let's talk about your president. Okay.
Oh, sure.
Because I hear people saying that he's demented, that he's senile, that he no longer has the cognitive abilities that you need to carry around the nuclear football, let alone all the other disastrous decisions he's already made and has already injured the American state with. I mean, you talk about this huge debt. He's printed more money in the course of his presidency than has ever been created in all of human history.
Well, but the damage done not just to our economy.
Is he crazy? Is he old? Is he senile? Is he crazy?
Oh, he's definitely old. Ask this question, Gary. When Trump came to office, they hired psychologists to determine his cognitive ability from a distance. where are the psychologists determining Joe Biden's? We have lay people going, he's wacko. You know, we don't need a psychologist. It's interesting. There's no effort to follow what's going on with Biden. But look at our foreign policy. It's incredible. Not just Biden, but what the Democrats in particular do, and their friends in the Republican Party who are willing accomplices, like fellow travelers, the rhinos, Republicans in name only, not true conservatives. They don't care what they do to U.S. foreign policy. There was a meeting between Trump and...
Was this like Mitt Romney, that kind of guy?
Well, he's one of those people. Yeah. And Mitch McConnell and Paul Ryan, who's no longer in government. But you put these people together. So they had a meeting with senators in the White House, and Trump was angry because they're proposing more foreign aid for Haiti. And he said, I don't want to give any more money to crap hole countries like Haiti and countries in Africa.
Right.
And they came out and ran to the press podium and told the press what Trump said. That's classified material. Right. That's if you can't have a frank conversation to negotiate for foreign policy and for government expenditures, you can't have a government. And that's what's been going on. Now, when Biden comes to office, first day, he's inaugurated on the 21st of January, 2021. Mm-hmm. 9 days later, Myanmar's military overthrows a democratically elected government, a thoroughly corrupt but democratically elected government. And they begin prosecuting former members of parliament, executing them, attacking minorities throughout the country. What does Joe Biden do or say? Nothing. 6 weeks after he becomes president, Russia moves 70,000 troops to the border with Ukraine. What does he say? Nothing. Do you know what would have worked that summer? A bilateral exercise with Ukraine, the 18th Airborne Air Corps going over there, 82nd Airborne, doing a bilateral exercise, showing a show of force to say, they're not allies, but we're friends with the Ukraines and with Ukraine. And
in other words, again, another deterrence. Point that people just breeze past in the conventional mainstream media is they say nothing about the fact that this Russia-Ukraine conflict could have been avoided from the get-go.
Oh, I agree 100%. It was only – well, okay. Look, when Bush was president, Putin invaded Georgia. Mm-hmm. When Obama was president, he invaded Ukraine in the Donbass and annexed Crimea. When Trump was president, he didn't invade anybody.
He didn't take any chances. Why? Because Trump is unpredictable.
Because he thinks he's crazy.
And he thought this guy's dangerous. You don't know what he might do.
Exactly.
And funnily enough, as soon as Biden comes in, six weeks later, he's like, okay, there's a moron. There's a meat puppet in the White House. Let's just move.
Well, in fact, your description is what I've been telling people since February 23rd of last year. Putin made the calculation that he'll never get someone as incompetent and inept in the White House ever again. Now's the time to act and take advantage of it. So that's what he did.
All right. But
a very terrible campaign, by the way.
But do you think he is in any way capable of running things? And if he isn't...
Biden.
Who is not at all. Okay, so who is running things then? Because
my guess would be Susan Rice and Barack Obama, to be honest.
But evidently there are decisions being made, very, very important decisions that have an enormous and long tail effect on what's going to happen in America for
and around the world.
Not just this generation, but two generations into the future because of all the debt that they're calculating at the moment. All the foreign policy decisions that have been made have been detrimental. Suddenly you're back in a war again. It seems to me like there are a lot of very, very precipitous and dangerous things being decided on by a man who clearly is not in control. So if it's Susan Rice or Barack Obama, what is their end game? Like what did they want out of this? Because this almost looks like it's destruction on purpose.
Well, there's a strong parallel with South Africa. It almost looks the same, doesn't it? It almost looks like the government.
Our destruction is by incompetence.
Well, but you have to wonder if it isn't also by design at some point too.
Never attribute to malice what can be explained by just pure incompetence.
Okay, I'll accept your premise there, but and maybe it's the same thing, incompetence here. But you know, the thing that's really frustrating about this is that there's talk now. McCarthy became the Speaker of the House from California. I covered that live 8 hours a day for first week of January. It's quite exhausting. And people said, our democracy is in trouble. I'm like, no, this is democracy in action. You know, he's not the anointed king, and people oppose that. You've got to negotiate and give and go. Well, he said he would never raise the debt ceiling. Now he's talking about a just debt ceiling level. What's frustrating about this is that these folks, the Democrats, watch how they voted the past 2 years when Biden's been there. Almost without fail, every single member of the House, Democrat, votes for every bill, regardless of what. They don't even read it. They just vote for it. And now McCarthy is talking about bipartisanship and Biden's calling for unity. No, forget that. Mm-hmm. Forget that. These people will not vote for America. They vote for their party. It's party over people. And that's, of course, the same thing you have in South Africa here. The Thule House matters more than South Africans do.
Yeah.
Caters are what matter. Cater lives matter. That's all that matters in South Africa.
Right.
And it's the same thing in the States. It's politicians' lives matter. It's not the people. That doesn't mean there aren't legitimate members in the House and in the Senate and in our state government, but there are too many people that are beholden to political parties, and we see the outcome. It's horrific.
Now, this kind of thing in history, and I know you're a student of history as well, doesn't have a very pretty picture for the people in charge in the long run. And what I mean by that is that very often the people reach their boiling point. And in South Africa, there are already mutterings about a tax revolt. There are people who are saying they're not going to pay any. In fact, our SARS commissioner just last week was quoted in the news as saying, oh no, South Africans will always do the right thing. But they might not.
No, they
especially,
might not.
Especially when, like American taxpayers, they feel like, hang on a second. And this is where I really want an opinion from you first, and then we can talk about tax more generally.
Sure.
But people do get to a point where they've had enough. And the question I want to ask you is, do you think the average American taxpayer is happy to have trillions sent to the Ukraine? Do middle Americans, and I'm not talking about, you know, coastal elites who meet at dinner parties and cocktail parties and in rarefied spaces and clink their glasses and say, "Oh, it's terrible what's happening in the Ukraine," because I don't even think they care. Yeah. To be perfectly honest, they tell each other they care. It's a kind of virtue signaling to prove that you're pure of thought. But do you think the average American gives a damn about the Ukraine?
No, I don't. I think that the entire situation with Ukraine from the outset, and let me be clear in my position before I answer about this. The war is unjustified. Putin is wrong, but so is Zelensky. So sure. is Biden. Biden is fueling a proxy war, as is Jens Stoltenberg at NATO. That's my view on it. This is all avoidable. It shouldn't have happened. But I don't think the average American cares. And it's taken over a year for people to realize after seeing $145 billion going to Ukraine. And we're sending them M1 Abrams tanks. And it's a joke. We're sending one battalion's worth of tanks. It's not enough to change the conflict. It's just enough to show that we're still engaged, pretty much, I guess, to pressure Russia. The whole thing was unnecessary, but Americans are getting angry about this now. They're angry that all this money is going there, and it seems endless. I became especially angry, not that I was a fan, but became especially angry when Zelensky spoke before our Congress, which is a privilege. Very few foreign leaders have ever gotten to do that. That really gives you an elevated stature. Ellen Johnson Sirleaf came and spoke to our Congress, and it was a big, important event for Liberia. So it's rare that it happens. He came and said, "Thank you for $45 billion. It's not enough. Give me more." Are you serious? Your wife was in Paris spending $60,000 buying clothing and bags in the middle of a war, and you want money from us? Take it, buddy. Footsec. So I think a lot of Americans are tired of it.
And tax in general, do you think it'll ever get to a point where Americans will be as pissed off as South Africans are right now, where they're saying, we're going to find alternate ways of not paying or of paying our taxes to a different set of people so that we can find a way around this corruption and this outrageous spending?
Well, the tough thing is that for Americans, much of the taxation we have is baked in. You can't avoid it. So payroll taxes come out of your pay if you work for an employer, regardless of what you do.
And let's just be clear about something.
Sure.
Prior to somewhere in the beginning of the 1900s, tax was not a part of the American system.
Well, we had levies on foreign goods. We had excise taxes, things like that. But we did not have an income tax.
There was no income tax.
It took an amendment to the Constitution to allow that. One of the worst amendments in our country's history, because that's led to the exorbitant growth of the federal government. It has, because for those who are not familiar with the American system, we are a republic of sovereign states. So 50 states inside a republic. The central government is not supposed to be all powerful. It was all weak under the original Articles of Confederation, so we came with the Constitution. And that system worked for a long time. But because of the imposition of the income tax, the government continually takes money out of the pocket and gets bigger and bigger and finds a reason to spend it. They keep talking about we have a taxation problem. We don't. We have a spending problem. If you look at what the budget is today, what it was 20 years ago, the government's taking in 2.5 times the revenue it took in 20 years ago. It's not delivering 250% more services and goods. It's just spending more beyond that. So, yeah, it did take a constitutional amendment to make income tax. But that's not the only tax. I pay federal income tax. I pay state income tax. I pay local income tax. Then I pay sales tax in my state. Every state can levy that. Then I pay for my cable bill. My cable bill is – you're gonna pass out when you hear this, folks. I pay almost 5,000 Rand a month for cable. Now, the reason I pay for that is because I need the broadband access to do my broadcasting. So it's also kind of a business thing. But – that bill, 48% of it is taxes and fees. My bill has gone from $159 a year and a half ago to $271. because of additional tax and fees that I have no say over. My property taxes for my house that I purchased have gone up 50% without a new valuation of my house in the last 7 years. This is insane. When I look at everything I spend, people talk about America being a low tax country. Over 60 to 70% of my income goes in taxes. It's insane.
Yeah, you kind of have to ask yourself, how did it get this carried away? Mm-hmm. That a bunch of people who are doing very little productively are parasitically living off the rest of us.
Good description.
It kind of drives me a little bit crazy. Now, we've got to talk a bit about what's been going on with NATO. We got to talk a little bit about the Ukraine. And you mentioned already that you think that it was avoidable, but obviously now that, you know,
That
horse is bolted.
We're in it, yeah.
So how do you see this, especially with your military experience? How do you see this wrapping up? Because I've spoken to a couple of people recently. Most impressive guy was last week. He's an expert on Russia and the Ukraine, and he's been in and out of Moscow for years, and he's told me about the Wagner Group and what their involvement is. It sounds to me like neither Putin nor Zelensky at the moment have any real incentive to wrap this up and to get back to peace and to allow people to live their lives and to allow normal trade and for the resumption of relations between countries. They want this to carry on. Both of them are incentivized against ending the war.
Absolutely. And that's been my argument from the get-go. There is no incentive. Why is no one talking about the Minsk agreement? Why has there not been a single offer? Where is Biden's his offer to do a peace conference? Where's that at? Never happened. Where's NATO's efforts? Where's the European Union, who desperately needs natural gas because of their foolish decisions like the Germans abandoning their nuclear power industry and now they're wholly dependent on Russian gas? Where is that effort at? There is no effort to end this war by anybody. No legitimate effort. We hear a little nonsense that Putin is ready to negotiate with Zelensky, but there aren't real negotiating terms. Zelensky says, in order to negotiate, you have to turn over the Crimea. Let's just be realistic. Russia's not going to give up the Crimea. Obama let that happen and did nothing about it. Not that it was his place to stop it. It's not going to change. It's a fait accompli. The only way you're going to get the Crimea back is to conquer it. And Ukraine doesn't have the capacity to do that. So both parties have nothing to gain by ending the war and everything. Look, Zelensky's getting money, world fame, attention. Yeah. I mean, he used to be a penis piano player. You know, that's what he did on stage. He used his penis to play a piano. And he's president of Ukraine. That doesn't mean he's not capable, but I'm just giving you an idea about the background, who the guy is. So neither one of these are credible actors, and neither is Biden or NATO at trying to end this conflict. People talk about the military-industrial complex, and that's what's fueling it. I think that's nonsense. The amount of money, it's billions, but the amount of money going to defense industry isn't what's driving this. The geopolitical distraction is what's driving this from the Western perspective. While our governments are doing things that people aren't paying attention to, they're focusing on Ukraine. Things are happening behind the scenes. We have crazy legislation being introduced in Congress all the time. That's been put to a stop with Republicans taking over the House for the short term. But if the Democrats...
What do you think? Because the Republicans have only really been there for a short while.
Yes.
One of the things I think everyone's talking about is the Twitter files and the fact that these Twitter execs were grilled the other day by the Republicans.
Brilliant.
That was something to see. And it may just be theater. A lot of it is, because this doesn't really affect the way that ordinary people's lives are lived. Maybe as much as some of the bills, the spending bills that they've passed in the previous Congress. But it does affect people, because this is the world's town square. This is where people exercise their freedom of speech. So in context, how important do you think this is?
Well, I think it's critically important for people to see it. But there's an effort by the government and by the political left in the mainstream media, the legacy media, and also, you know, the propagandists for the government to try to distract from it, saying it's just, there's nothing to it. Mm. I saw The Hill write an article basically saying it's a big nothing burger, when that's actually not the case at all. They've caught these people red-handed. I mean, when the government, through the Federal Bureau of Investigation, sends a request to a private media company to stop someone's account from doing something or give them access to data from that account, if they do that without a warrant from a judge, from a duly appointed judge, then they're acting on behalf of the FBI illegally.
Correct.
That is a violation of the First Amendment of the Constitution. There is no higher violation of our law. And the fact that the leftists and the media running around saying that there's been no violation, the Republicans have nothing here, it's nothing burger, is utter nonsense. Most of us knew, those of us involved in social media, knew that this sort of thing was happening. I can attest to it personally from my experience on YouTube, what they did to me repeatedly. Yeah. it's genuine, it's real. And it's not just wackadoodles. I don't run around and go, Dominion, Dominion, you know, ooh, aliens from the sky. Although one of our generals is saying UFOs are
apparently. I wanted to ask you about, well, listen, I mean, they're already going to say, just seeing you and me sitting talking to each other in a studio, someone somewhere is going to say, oh my God, this is like some right wing conspiracy.
Of course. Well, we lack sufficient pigmentation.
Yeah.
And we probably have the wrong gender analysis.
No, we're screwed. No one wants to hear from us, right? But the fact is, like, there's so much weird shit going on at the moment that you cannot help but ask these questions.
Yeah.
And I'm afraid if COVID did anything, I was very worried at the beginning of COVID because I thought, oh, government's back in business all over the world. Yeah. Now they're going to start, you know, getting involved in our lives in ways that we thought we were rid of them. But actually what COVID's done by showing how incompetent and how bad at their job these guys are and how nefarious they are, and also, frankly, how deleterious they are to our actual well-being. Mm. I think they've shot themselves in the foot. I reckon there are probably a lot of people in big government world who were saying to themselves, oh, this COVID thing is great because it gives us a chance to clamp down again. And sure, they did that. But I think they're going to have a very tough time doing it again. And it's made a lot more people suspicious of them than might have been before.
Well, last year at the Conservative Political Action Convention in Orlando, which I went to as a journalist, there was someone put shirts out that they're selling. You know, they're always selling stuff like that at these events. Mm. And there's a shirt and a cap, which I have. It says, awake, not woke. And I think what's happened because of the scam or the pan or whatever you want to call it, this past few years, a lot of people around the world are actually awake now. And I see that here in South Africa. If I could just divert to that for a second. You know, when I was here 6 months ago, and in the past, you find a lot of South Africans are angry about, you know, everything under the sun with good reason.
Yeah.
It's an amazing country, but lots of shortcomings, unfortunately. We all have them. 6 months ago, I talked to Zulu, Venda, Ndebele, Xhosa. I met a few Khoisan, also Afrikaners, Portuguese, German, South Africans. And people were angry. And of course, a lot of the white folks were angry at the ANC. Not all, but a lot were angry at the ANC. This time, in KZN, in the Free State, in the Western Cape, and now here in Gauteng, what I've had is, I talk to petrol station attendants because I tip them all the time because they don't make much money and they give good service. Cool. I talk to waiters. I talk to clerks, or as people like to say, clerks in the shopping mm-hmm. stores. I talk to everybody because I find everybody interesting at some level. And what I'm finding this time is almost to a man and woman, everyone I've talked to in South Africa is angry, but there's a difference. Most are angry at the African National Congress. And that doesn't bode well for 2024 for the ANC. A lot can change between now and then, but a lot are angry. And to me, that's an indication that maybe some people are waking up. You know,
even believe it or not, people in the media are starting to see that. There are a lot of people who are like,
it's shocking to see the media change its tone the last 5 or 6 months.
Well, some of them. I mean, there's still going to be that kind of pray for Cyril crowd who will back the president no matter what. Well, we know why, because largely they're just a bunch of cowards. It's not particularly ideological or anything else. And corporate South Africa is also a bunch of cowards.
Oh, no doubt about it. They're part and parcel of this whole mess. You know, one of the problems with South Africa's economy is that people think you have all these brands. But, I mean, a lot of all these retail chains and fast food places are all owned by one or two major corporate conglomerates, like Famous Brands owns all these things. Edgar's owned
CNA. But also, a lot of them are also owned by foreign
That's true too.
Businesses. Yeah. And the guys who run it here are actually just agents locally for that brand. Yeah. So they're terrified to step out of line because they've got a nice cushy job.
Fair point.
And if you live well in South Africa, you live very well.
Indeed. That is true.
Okay. Let's just quickly circle back in the words of Jen Psaki to your comment earlier about this general. What's his name? Something with an H.
I heard him
just this morning, so we got to talk about this.
Yes.
Some unidentified flying object shot down over the Great Lakes. They're not sure how it...
Hectagonal shape.
They're not sure how it stays aloft. This is what the general said. He says he's not sure if it's a kind of propulsion system, if there's some sort of buoyancy created by a balloon, and we've had balloons in the air in the last couple of days, haven't we?
Yeah.
What is this when a general says this in a press briefing, and I don't know whether whether we want to go into the world of conspiracy theories and aliens or anything else, but what the hell do you make of this? Because this is a very blatant admission by them that they shot something out of the sky that they didn't know what it was.
And they shot it down without knowing.
Right.
That's a very good point. That's a very frightening statement.
They would
right
never
there.
Have admitted that publicly under any other administration. I think they're only getting away with it because the president doesn't know what the hell's going on.
Well, just mention, let's go back with Trump's president. Imagine a general comes out and says, we shot something down. We're not eliminating the possibility it was alien. Well, they would pillar Trump. They would, even though a general said it.
Well,
that'd be the only story.
Joe Biden didn't shoot down the Chinese spy balloon for what, 5 days?
As it floated across multiple plain state missile and silo locations.
And I then when he did, everyone was like, yeah, that's our man, Joe Biden, shooting things down.
He's late and tardy as usual.
I mean, unbelievable. Yeah. But let's just put the Trump Biden stuff aside. Yeah. It is pretty astonishing that they would admit that they've shot something down and they don't know what it is.
I agree. That's
where
the most,
it comes from.
That's the most frightening part of it. The most entertaining part is I can't dismiss that it's an alien origin.
Yeah.
That's entertaining.
It's a big deal. I mean, you imagine those people who've been prepping, who live in those underground bunkers, going, oh, I told you it was true. And finally, we've got an admission from the federal government that it's true.
They're all descending on Area 51 now or whatever out in Nevada. No, but that's the fact that they shot down something that they couldn't identify is very frightening. If I was Canadian, I'd be concerned. You know, I mean, it's right on the border with Canada. They actually shut down our airspace for a radar blip the other day.
Right.
Have we become so incompetent that we can't even read radar screens anymore?
Well, let me ask you this. Your transportation secretary, who only got his job because he was gay. I mean,
that's why I got it.
Is there another reason?
Well, there's the only reason the press secretary has her job is because she's a lesbian and she's black. That's it.
Was Pete Buttigieg like involved in transport?
No,
before?
Not at all. He was the mayor of a town of 8,000 and an abysmal failure in that city. And that's all he'd ever done in life.
But he has sex with men. So he's a great transportation
secretary. Well, but that wasn't even known until just before he ran for office when that became publicly known. So, but I mean, that's his personal situation. Not of interest to me. But his qualification to be Secretary of Transportation is nil. Look, I'm better qualified to be the Minister of Electricity. By the way, I'm standing for Minister of Electricity for South Africa.
Oh, good.
Just so you know. Okay.
We'll put you in the pile.
Okay. And my party is the Wyatt Army. Hashtag Wyatt Army. So.
Yeah. You said army. That's going to frighten the hell out of them. You're an American. That frightens the hell out of them. You're white. You're a man.
Actually, I'm pink.
You're a big problem. No, you can't. Sorry, we're going to put yours at the bottom of the pile. Okay, but let's just settle into this conversation a little bit, because under Pete Buttigieg, just to illustrate my point, you had that complete shutdown of American civil aviation for a while, right? He has completely screwed up the ports since COVID.
Oh.
Rail is now a problem. Apparently, there's this train that is just derailed in Ohio somewhere.
On the border of Pennsylvania.
And it's causing enormous natural damage. Water table, air quality.
Well, sulfuric acid in the air.
Yeah, hydrochloric acid. Hydrochloric acid and phosgene.
Yeah.
That's a chemical weapon,
yes.
Right, so this is the Ministry of Transportation, the Department of Transportation's business.
Yes.
And is he still on paternity leave or is there some other excuse?
I don't know. Look, two things. Let's get to the train accident in a second. But let's go back to the thing.
This is ANC level incompetence, by
the
way. Oh,
yeah. This is probably even better.
I can speak about this because here in South Africa, as you know, we have ministers who have no qualification, who are parachuted into jobs that they are completely incompetent at. And then when everything goes wrong, they go, oh, collective responsibility.
Well, I mean, you have people who are permanent ministers. That's all they do. Like Lindiwe Sisulu, who lives off her parents' name and rotates from one incompetency to another.
She hasn't even pitched for parliamentary hearings where she is the important witness. So you don't have to tell me about this.
She approves the trip for the Tottenham sponsorship, and now she wants an investigation into it.
Now it's got nothing to do with her.
Yeah, exactly.
But Mayor Pete's the same.
Oh, absolutely. He's just an empty vessel completely. But the two things I want to focus on very quickly, which will draw this to a point and make a lot of sense here, is that the ports was a total failure. Because we've offshored so much of our manufacturing to China, we're not alone. You've done the same. Mm-hmm. The world has done it. Because we've done that, we're highly dependent on cargo shipping and the arrival of goods coming in. Long Beach in California, San Diego, and all our ports on the West Coast were jammed with hundreds of cargo ships that couldn't get in because of the chaos that was taking place with longshoremen related to the lockdown and restrictions were taking place. And then there was a strike at one point. And Buttigieg is on parental leave. And this leads to, you know, and it's not, this stuff has to come every day. A country of 330 million consumers, you don't just stop a shipment of DVD players and the next day there's DVD. No, you wind up with supply chain hiccups that repeat for months. And that has caused inflation. That has caused unavailability. And what I didn't know, and I learned, and I always like learning things, is that, you know, we invented Tylenol. That's acetaminophen, mm-hmm. you know, that for headaches and such and pain. We don't manufacture it. It's all manufactured in China. That's crazy. So basic things like over-the-counter medicines, we don't even make anymore when we have the capacity to do it. And Buttigieg exacerbated this situation with what I call Biden inflation, which is all entirely a consequence of his inept domestic macroeconomic policies and his foreign policy. All of that is why these prices are high. There's no reason for energy to be twice the price it was a couple years ago. And Biden runs around going, oh, well, the price of gasoline is only... No, it's still 75% higher than the day he took office. So that's the first thing. The train thing, this is quite frightening, Gareth. The United States, people look at the United States, in Europe especially, and go, oh, Americans, their rail system is a joke. Yeah, because we don't have a reliable passenger rail service. It's just too big a country. It's too vast. It works for certain corridors like Boston, cool. and New York.
But they're, of course, claiming that comparing it to their own cities.
And, yes, and exactly, which are densely packed and very small in size. Right. I mean, you could put Europe into the eastern United States, you know, Western Europe. Yeah. But we have the world's fastest, most efficient, and best freight rail system by far. We move freight rail better than anybody in the world, beyond question. There's no doubt about it. But here's the thing. How does this happen? And why is it being covered? It's not even covered by the mainstream media, the story you mentioned. It's being completely ignored. I have received multiple Telegram and WhatsApp messages from people in the States going, Chris, what's going on? I'm like, well, I'm in South Africa right now. I really can't tell you. But they're wondering why it's not in the news. This is scaring people.
But the Chinese spy balloon was on news like the OJ car chase.
Exactly. Yeah. Isn't that interesting?
It's look, it is weird. And again, I've got to say, before anybody hops on this and says, you know, this is two crazy people who believe in conspiracy theories. No, it turns out that a lot of those people who believe in the conspiracy theories ended up being right.
Yeah.
On COVID and pretty much everything since. So here's the question I have to ask you. What do you think's really going on? And lay it all out there, even if it is conspiracy stuff. Like, what do you feel like these badly motivated people are actually after? What do they want?
Well, it depends where you're talking about, but I think in general, it's about power and privilege. That's what these people want. These elites want power and privilege. Beyond that, I think that some of them actually believe, a small number actually think they're doing something right, not many. And others actually think, I suspect there are people that really want to just, you know, destroy the whole system and rebuild it because they won't be affected by it. I mean, the Bill Gates mm-hmm. and the Klaus Schwabs and the Joe Bidens, they aren't affected by inflation or by fuel shortages or by load shedding or by people walking up and shooting you in the head at your gate. That doesn't happen to those people. They fly where they want, on jets when they want. They go to Davos. They go to Monte Carlo at their own leisure. The world doesn't revolve. It doesn't affect them the way that affects the rest of us.
Private security and all
that. That's right. That's, you know, it's like you see these Hollywood celebrities complain about firearms, and then they're walking around. They got four bodyguards with pistols on them. But we can't have firearms. Give me a break. No, I think that it's a combination of things, and ultimately it's about power and privilege. You know, in South Africa, for instance, we just mentioned this, you know, the blue light escorts, the egos for illiterate, uneducated, or poorly performing members of parliament, ministers, you know, that vote of no confidence, if it had been secret, the entire cabinet would have been gone here last year. There's no doubt about that. There would have been enough ANC members that bolted, mostly because they want those seats and the other people would have been dumped. But these people live in a world that the rest of us don't deal with. I mean, you got to wonder how many of them actually got jabbed when they sat there for the photo and weren't getting saline and what's going on. People talk about that, but they live in a completely different world and they like to lord over other people. And I don't know how we got to the stage, because 30 years ago, we defeated communism, the peace dividend, the world's wonderful. And then we started stumbling through a series of international fiascos like the Balkans and Somalia mm-hmm. and many other things. Yep. And the world kind of geopolitically lost its way for a few years. We went from a unipolar world at the end of the Cold War with just the U.S. to now a bipolar world with China's rise, maybe a tripolar world when you consider the European Union the third power. But I really think that a lot of these people, it's just about privilege. And, you know, I wonder about Bill Gates. What happened to Bill Gates?
Yeah, what did
he get
happen
bullied
to him?
As a child?
What happened to him?
He was a brilliant entrepreneur.
Yeah, so I also don't want to like become ridiculous and say he's the one who's trying to kill off thousands and thousands of people. And, you know, he's behind some Machiavellian evil you know, supreme leader of the reptiles or any of that nonsense.
But I do think
Bill Gates he's become like this very weird guy who's, you know, every time they ask him a question, someone asked him the other day about his private jet. His answer was so garbled and nonsense. It was all about paying carbon taxes and things. I mean, essentially, he's just looking for a place to hide when a question like that comes up.
Exactly.
So how much of it is principle? And you almost want to know who's paying the piper.
And in his case, what's the point? I mean, he's got more wealth than he could ever spend. He's given away half his wealth. And he's still unbelievably wealthy, one of the wealthiest men in the world. You just have to wonder what's going on here. Now, what bothers me about all this stuff, Gareth, is that truth has just become a cheap commodity that's tossed aside. I mean, you mentioned carbon there. You know, I went to school, and in science class, I learned that carbon is important, carbon dioxide. Trees and plants need it. You know, they release oxygen for us, release carbon dioxide, they absorb it. And without that, they don't do very well. And these people that want to reduce carbon, the things that they want to do is just absolutely ridiculous. So for instance, we're going to give South Africa $9.7 billion between the European Union and the United States for the just energy transformation. So the South Africans
haven't you already given it to us?
No, not to my knowledge. No.
It's still coming, is it?
No, we did give $711 million to Aspen Pharmacare to produce vaccines and gave them the intellectual property and the centrifuges and all the equipment to make it. Could you tell me where the first COVID vaccine from Aspen has been delivered in South Africa or Africa? I can't. $711 million. Yeah. Anyway, but back to that. So we're going to give South Africa nearly $10 billion not to burn coal. So instead, we're going to ship it to Richards Bay, the world's largest coal terminal, ship it in kerosene-burning cargo ships, the worst polluting vessels on the planet, to Europe to go to German coal fire power plants, and they're going to burn it there. Now, I ask you, how does that save carbon? It doesn't. But they love the scheme. The greenies love that because they're just frauds, total frauds.
All right, so you're here in South Africa again. What do you think that South Africa really needs? Because we hear about how, in 2024, you even said this yourself, the ANC is going to be in trouble. But are the opposition parties ready to do what needs to be done? And when we see how they've all behaved in coalition, and look, some are more responsible than others for the collapse of these coalitions, I don't believe for a second that all of them have the best needs of the people in mind when they make these coalitions, when they make any decisions as part of these coalitions. But there are some who are doing better than others. How do you see this landscape developing over the next 2-3 years? Because everybody says, when the ANC loses 50%, then everything will get better. But I think that's a very naive, very childish way to look at things.
I agree for a number of reasons. First off, the ANC is already below 50%. The 2020 municipal elections, they got 46% of the popular vote. But only 31% of the population that was eligible voted. That means that 13% of the electorate actually voted for the ANC.
Right.
So that's well below 50%. Now, everyone else is below that, of course. So that's the first thing. Second thing, a year ago, after that election, now it's been over a year ago, I predicted that the ANC would get 38 to 42% in 2024 based on those circumstances. I stick with that estimate today, but I reserve the right to lower it going forward. If things continue to get worse, the ANC may do even more poorly. And the reason municipal elections are so important is because I urge people for a year before. Unlike the political parties, I don't wait till 90 days before an election to start talking about it and handing out T-shirts and three-piece Streetwise from KFC, and putting posters up.
That's what they're doing.
That's what they all do. You know, well, not all, but most of them do. They hand out T-shirts and they put posters up 90 days. You must campaign 365 days a year, 7 days a week, every day of the month. Bring people to your standard. You must convince them that you're there for their benefit and you represent them. You're not there for blue light escorts. You're not there for a salary. You're not there for perks. You'll get that stuff, but that's just remuneration for what you're doing for the people. But parties, by and large, don't do that. They just don't do that. They go and they disappear and you never hear from them again until selection time. Then your mobile rings. Hi, we're from the DA. Hi, we're from the ANC. We like your vote. So the election coming up... This is what I expect to happen. The ANC will probably get 38%, maybe less. That's my prediction.
Wow, so that low, huh?
You got me right here. You're predicting. Well, look at the last one. Because of the insurrection, July 2021, which was either allowed or orchestrated.
I like the way you called that an insurrection.
It is an insurrection. Yeah. It was an internal insurrection.
Was
ANC.
January the 6th an
insurrection? No, that's a joke. That's an absolute joke. I was there as a journalist. I have 6 hours of video footage.
Really?
There was no insurrection.
Okay, we'll get back
to that. At worst,
there
was a riot.
All right, so let me not distract you from
2021,
your train of thought.
That was an internal insurrection in the ANC between the Radical Economic Transformation faction and others. Because you can't say that there's a Ramaphosa faction because he doesn't have friends.
No, he's just paying people to.
Exactly. Yeah. So there isn't like it's his camp. So that was internal. And there was intentional effort, in my view, by people within the bureaucracy, in the services, in the intelligence services, criminal police, intelligence, and in the government, and in SAPS, to not take action. And it shows up in the actions. The police were not prepared. They had not rehearsed. They did not have ammunition. They did not have resources. They didn't prepare key strategic points. And on June 29th of that year, I predicted that chaos. Not to that scale, Gareth. I mean, I had no idea 350,000 people were going to loot and 354 people were going to die that we know about. I didn't predict that, but I predicted in Nkana there would be chaos, there would be looting, there would be riots all over KZN because of the situation. If I can do that from the States without spies on the ground and signals intelligence.
How come our intelligence services couldn't pick up a damn thing?
Exactly.
What? But, well, again, never ascribe to malice what you can't explain with incompetence.
Well, and incompetence may have very well played a big role there. But it's embarrassing when the SANDF finally deployed days later, they didn't have rations. They had to go jump in the queue.
They didn't have ammo either. They had to ask civilians for ammunition.
Well, the police didn't have it during the riots, and people had to fly it down in private planes for them. But when that internal insurrection happened, then let's roll forward to November 1st when the elections take place, municipal elections. The DA is fond of saying that they're the only party that did well, but they're whistling past the cemetery. That's comical. You can't compare the 2019 election, which is what they're talking about, to 2021. That's national. This is a municipal election. You have to look at 2016. In 2016, the ANC had 10.5 million votes in that election. In 2021, they had 8 million. They lost 31% of their voters. But look where they lost them. In KZN, people stayed away from the polls. The IFP had control, I think, 8 municipalities before these elections. Now it has control of 16. Not because they gained voters. They only gained 2%. The reason they have control of 16 is either an outright majority, a majority coalition, or a minority coalition because ANC voters didn't go vote. They voted by not voting. And that's key here. So I don't know what their figure was, numbers. I don't have that level of detail from the IEC about, you know, actually who voted registered for the ANC in that province. But you can see that they cratered in KZN. In the rest of the country, I expect that to happen in the Western Cape and in Gauteng in the next election. It's not going to happen in the Eastern Cape. It's not going to happen in Mpumalanga, in Limpopo. Those strongholds and those people were there by and large still going to vote the way they have. But the ANC is in trouble. And I expect that they are going to need a coalition partner. Now, a lot of people think that the EFF is going to be a coalition partner. I don't think so.
Why do you think?
I think Ramaphosa detests Malema, and he doesn't trust the EFF. And what little support he's been able to get recently by marginalizing people in his party will evaporate if he brings the EFF in. I think it's unlikely. Not impossible, but unlikely. But here's a scary thought. And people are talking about it now, and I didn't want to talk about this. But what about when the DA goes into coalition with the ANC in 2024?
Well, this is what Helen Zille said.
Did she say that? I didn't catch it.
Yeah, she did. So, I mean, I don't mean to steal your thunder. It's obviously you're in good company if she's agreeing with you. She's a very experienced and smart politician and one of the few who's managed to pull coalition governments together.
Indeed.
In the most arduous circumstances. So,
and genuine liberation credentials.
Yeah, absolutely. So if she says that she agrees with you or if you agree with her, that's a good thing. But she did a while ago say that that's the likeliest outcome, that the good part of the ANC, whatever that may be.
That's pretty small.
will have to ally itself with someone. And she said it's most likely going to be the DA.
Yeah.
And that they will then have a sufficient majority to be able to run things properly and to hopefully overcome the ideological problems that have bogged the ANC down so far, their complete lack of understanding of merit, their complete lack of understanding of why cater deployment's a terrible idea. I mean, if we can just get that out of the way, we'll already have moved 10 steps in the right direction.
Yeah, the problem with that, Gareth, is that I understand where she's coming from. I just don't see the ANC
I didn't say I agreed.
Oh, yeah, I just don't see the ANC the way. I think that what we'll get is a coalition government possibly like that, and then we'll have inside that coalition government, we'll have the good parts of the DA that want to govern, and it'll be kind of like, not as bad, but like Zimbabwe's government of national unity. Mugabe lost the election and refused to give up the presidency. And so they gave the MDC, the treasury, and things like that, and they restored the economy. And things went well, but they retained the police, the intelligence, security, and they still persecuted the opposition, even though they're in government with them. I'm not predicting that. What I'm saying is that the corruption will continue because part of the government will be honest, part of the government will not be honest, and it will just South Africa will just limp along if that's the case. The optimal scenario is this. The ANC drops below the 38% that I predicted last year, and let's say they get 33%. They can't form a coalition government. They can't get the Pan-African Congress or the Patriotic Alliance or enough little parties together.
Then what happens?
Then the DA, the Freedom Front Plus, the ACDP, the IFP, they solve their problems. They get together and they form a coalition government and you go forward. But even under that circumstance, it's going to be a bumpy road for South Africa. You have to remember that the bureaucracy at all levels was installed by the ANC. And there are competent people in your bureaucracy, but there are a lot of incompetent, unqualified people across the provincial, the municipal, and the national governments. And they'll still be there. And they owe their loyalty to Luthuli House, not to the new government. So that will take time. So it's going to be a bumpy road for South Africa the next few years. I'll tell you what, I think the scariest part is this electricity thing. Over the past year, if it hadn't been for the interventions of heroic engineers at ESCOM and Andre de Ruyter, who's being pillared now, your grid will have collapsed. And a collapse of the electricity grid is not a simple thing.
All right. So what do we do with electricity? I mean, again, I'm not expecting you to solve all these problems, but everybody I encounter now has a way that they would deal with it if it was their thing.
Sure.
You know, if they were empowered to sort everything out, this is what we would do. What would you do?
Well, there's no immediate solution. First off, let's look at the ANC's emergency solution, March 27th, 2021, 2,000 megawatts emergency power generation through wind turbines, solar photovoltaic, and 1,220 megawatts from car powership.
Ah, so you're all for that.
No. I'm just saying that's their emergency plan. If in fact on March 7th, the environmental ministry gives the car powership the go ahead to go forward and another fraudulent court case contesting, you know, about their contract comes up, doesn't come up, it will be another 14 to 16 months before the first kilowatt. That means it'll be 3 years and 6 months after the ANC approved an emergency plan to deliver it. Their plans don't work. So the only thing you can do in the short term is those who have the resources, and I've been advocating this for years, you got to go off grid. I mean, that's the reason why people have JoJo's in their property. Yeah. It's not just to save water. It's so you don't have to rely on cities. You're going to have to provide your own services. Communities are going to have to do things for themselves. It's not convenient. It's not nice. And
but
most South Africans can't do it.
People can't.
That's what I mean. Most people can't. But every person that's able to do it, that isn't on the grid anymore, takes less pressure off the grid and helps those poor people out. People don't look at that. Every kilowatt that's taken off the grid puts less strain on it and is more available for those who are poor and leads to less load shedding. In the long term, what has to happen is that ESCOM should have been privatized 30 years ago. It should have been broken into regional entities that had the viable capacity to deliver power, and it should be out there, and they should be able to share power over the grid like they do in the UK and we do in North America, and sell power over the grids and share the lines and pay fees for it. And that will lead to competition. That will lead to better quality. Also, the ANC needs to abandon this fealty to environmental lunatics from Europe. Oh, you can't burn coal. New coal-fired power plants have much cleaner scrubbers, put far less sulfur, far less carbon dioxide in the air than in the past. You have coal. Burn coal. You need
cheap. But I love the way they just pretend that batteries don't have any.
Yeah, like they're not environmentally dangerous.
So if you've got wind or solar or anything else, you still need to store that power.
Exactly.
And if you store it in batteries, I'm terribly sorry to tell you, a lot of those batteries contain stuff which is causing way more environmental harm when it's mined out than anything else. No one, everyone pretends that's just not part of the conversation.
Well, I'm not one of those people who pretends. I'm an energy industry analyst as well. And I've been telling people for years, look, if you, in South Africa, I actually encourage people to go with solar photovoltaic because of ESCOM, it makes sense.
And because we get a lot of sun.
Yeah, but even so, I mean, I have issues with the panels because they're not really recyclable. A lot of them wind up in landfills. They claim they're good for 15 to 20 years. That's nonsense. You have to place them.
So do these Europeans who the government here are swearing fealty, in your words, to, acting with malice aforethought, or do they really believe they're doing the right thing? Do they really believe they're helping? I mean, I think
there's three camps here.
I can't imagine that they aren't smart enough to have done a little bit of research for themselves.
Well, I think most people don't look at the entire life cycle of things. You know, once again, in school, I learned in secondary school that, you know, every action has an equal and opposite reaction. You know, when you do something, there's a consequence. First off, there's no such thing as green energy. Mm. Every energy pollutes in some form. Some is just less polluting. Yeah. But they don't look at the entire life cycle, and that's what's so frustrating about it. Solar panels will work for people in South Africa for various reasons. But the technologies you talk about for alternative energy, the best one of those that isn't talked about much is concentrated solar power, where they use the big reflectors, and they heat up the tower and the mirrors, and then they heat molten salt, and that stays warm overnight, and it generates steam and power all night long. So you don't need batteries. But those batteries are disastrous. You know, it drives me nuts when people talk about electric vehicles. Really? Do you know what mountainsides are destroyed and how many water tables are contaminated and how much carnage is done to get rare earth elements to make those things, the coatings for wind turbines, the solar photovoltaic panels, the batteries for electric vehicles? You know, I saw, and that's just a practical environmental standpoint, but from a useful standpoint, they're at, well, you can go for 300 miles. Great. So I can drive to Ohio and then I'm stuck on the interstate because there's nowhere to charge it. Oh, but we're going to build all these power stations. Then you're going to draw power from the grid. Hey, we're using coal. No, we're using solar. Well, that's not, what irritates me is that people just look at something and they buy into it. I'll give you a quick example of this that makes a lot of sense. In Germany, back in the early 1990s, they came up with the Grüne Punkt, the green dot. And this was a voluntary industry standard where you paid fees as a manufacturer or a food producer or someone that makes, you know, wrappings and such. You paid fees, which meant that those fees we used to collect this stuff and recycle it. The plastic containers, the packaging for furniture and stereos. Well, all that stuff was recycled and packaged. But then we found out a few years later that there was so much plastic that they couldn't recycle it in Germany because it's not easy to recycle plastic. So they put it on barges and they shipped it to Thailand where it was put into landfills. So Germans were buying these goods, virtue signaling, thinking they were helping.
NIMBYism.
Exactly.
Not in my backyard.
Well, that's part of it, but they thought they were doing something good and they were being hoodwinked. And that's right. What happens with this green energy thing. People are being hoodwinked. Look, I'm all for reducing pollution. I'm a conservationist. And in my view, you don't piss in your own backyard. You take care of your property. You take care of the environment. You plant new trees.
It's ironic that people who are supposedly on the right and who are the ones who are out in the country fishing, shooting, hunting, you know, growing things, often the farmers are all kind of right-wingers, you know. These are the people who the environmentalists are trying to smear as being the bad guys.
And they're the ones actually taking care of and
when they're not living in inner cities, they're not driving polluting vehicles
all over
the place.
Big suburban SUVs. Yeah.
These are the people who actually know and understand nature probably much better than anyone who's sitting in a glass tower in New York City telling everyone else what the environment needs and doesn't
Ironic, need. Isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, I was a dairy farmer in high school. We had Jerseys and Guernseys. Since I learned the value of hard work, milking cows at 5 o'clock in the morning and 5:30.
That's interesting because I bet you most American kids think milk comes from the supermarket.
They probably do. I think most Europeans think it comes out of Tetra.
Most South Africans even.
Most Europeans think it comes out of Tetra Paks.
Yeah, right.
No, it's true.
All right. So when you open your phone up and when you switch it on in the morning and you look at what the news is, what are your sources? Who do you trust? Because this is a big problem for so many of us.
Sure.
I grew up in the mainstream media. I believed things that were put to me on the news because I had no reason not to believe them. And mostly the news media had this, I suppose, a universal idea of conscience where they felt like if we don't give people the right information, it'll burn us in the long run because we'll lose credibility and everything else. Something's happened in the last, I don't know where it is, probably the last 12 years.
I'd say at least 20 years, since 9/11.
You think longer?
Since 9/11.
Since 9/11 in your opinion. But something has changed where now these people are not to be trusted. They've shown themselves to be a part of the problem. They're not trying to give us objective news. And now they want to punish us for realizing that about them. Hmm.
No, I agree with 100%. So my sources, listen, I've always read widely. I used to have 43 magazine subscriptions before this lockdown stuff started. I subscribed. I got some academic. I used to teach at universities. So you get academic rates, which helps. So I could afford that. Yeah. I'm not Bill Gates, but I could afford 43 because I had the academic subscription rates. And I read everything under the sun. I read European press, South African press, American press, Australian, the English in Japan. There isn't much English, but that as well. So I read stuff from around the world. And a lot of those subscriptions have died because those things have folded. They've gone out of business. But what daily basis, I pay for subscriptions because what I do is I look at news sources and I report the stories that I think are interesting for my audience or at least interesting to me. And it usually pans out. They like it. And my sources in South Africa are ones that people don't trust, because what I do is I take the story and then I point out the motivation, or I point out the obvious propagandizing. I mean, when you write a news story and you start throwing adjectives in, that's not news. That's op-ed. When you start using adjectives to describe something, you're not reporting the
news. What do you think of ChatGPT and OpenAI?
ChatGPT is interesting, but be careful. The results have tended to be a bit far more left of center than people realize.
Well, a little bit?
Yeah. I mean,
if you ask it anything political, it gives you this long thing about how it's not political. But
it's a disclaimer.
But you ask it a political question that has a directly political answer, and it gives you a very left of center answer. It's clearly, yeah. I mean, there are overrides for that. If you're really smart, you can kind of get the AI to question itself. Mm-hmm. And often, like if you ask it a question more than two or three times, it comes up with different answers, and you point out to it that it's lying. And it says, no, I'm just trying to give you the most, you know, obvious, most straightforward answer, and I endeavor to give you truth and objectivity. It's obviously,
I agree.
Being programmed by people, which is where the problem is.
And that's where the problem is. It's not like it's just inherent. It's people that are doing it. But in South Africa, my news sources, I use News 24. So, of course, I read Adrian Basson and Melanie Favert and all the others, none of whom I agree with for the most part. There are a few people there that actually do report the news on that site. And, of course, that's a part of a bigger, you know, NASPERS and all that. And so, other things like Rapport. The Afrikaans sites, I read those, but my Afrikaans is not good enough that I rely on a lot. I mean, I understand it, so I read those.
Sure.
Also, the Daily Maverick, which I thought was a brilliant publication, but has begun to trend a bit left as far as I'm concerned. I'm getting concerned. But their investigative reporting is still pretty good, I think. The Daily Maverick, I thought was the Mail and Guardian, I thought was a brilliant publication 15 years ago. Now I have grave concerns about its level of reporting. It seems to be much less objective than it used to be, in my view. Independent Online, that I also read, and a number of other ones that come up. But those are the main sources that I look at for the news every day in South Africa to see what's being reported on. I don't care for Twitter. It's a toxic space, but I do have accounts on there, and I do go to Twitter for breaking news because someone's always on the ground just putting a video up. And what I typically do is bring it up, attribute it to the source, and then I will analyze it from my perspective. In the States, the usual ones, the Washington Compost, the Post, the New York Slimes, the New York Times. I also have the Wall Street Journal. I do have the Wall Street Journal as well, subscription to that. And then I also, these are all online, not print versions, because people don't deliver these things anymore. Also, I have the Epoch Times, which is a center-right publication, which is pretty good. And then the Washington Times, which is to the right. And what else? So that's the big ones. But I look at all of my – I try to find diverse sources. So like also I look – because I do global news. So I look at Al Jazeera frequently. And from my perspective, Al Jazeera, when they report on Africa, relatively objective, good stories. Yeah. When they report in the Middle East, forget it. It's all propaganda. When they report in the U.S. and Europe, it's all propaganda. And then in Europe, The Guardian. I read The Guardian every day.
You do?
It induces abdominal pain. Yes,
wow.
I do.
Okay. Well, you're braver than me.
Gareth, you got to understand that I'm refuting a lot of what – so people – I'm saying this is what they're saying, but this is what's really going on. And people can decide for themselves. I want them to think critically.
Well, look, you and I, we always have too little time.
Yeah.
But it's great to see you, and please keep doing your good work. And I encourage people to follow you on social media and everywhere else. See what you're reading, see what you're writing, see who you're talking to. There's lots of really cool stuff. Listen to what you're saying on your podcast. There's plenty more where this came from. And Chris Wyatt, thank you very much.
Well, it's my pleasure. Thanks a lot, Gareth. Great to see you again.
Good stuff. CliffCentral.com.